Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Mags, what exactly do you think of wrestling Twitter at this moment in time?
I wish they were all maimed.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever and whenever you may be listening. This is Chain Wrestling with Mags and Si, and the day is finally here. After teasing it for weeks and weeks and weeks, on the 30th anniversary of WrestleMania 7, we are going to look back on the absolute horror shit show that is Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter. With me, as always, and on this occasion, quite reluctantly,
under absolute duress,
is the General Adnan to my Colonel Mustafa, the Camel Clutch to my Camel Scrotch, a podcaster that says, if you hurt his friends, all you hurt is pride. He's actually probably going to be surprisingly okay with that. It's Mr. Mags himself. How are we doing, sir?
I mean, not only would I be okay with it, I would probably help you take them down if need be. I would be willing to lend a hand. Yeah, I'm doing okay, considering I've just had to watch something I've avoided watching, like the plague.
So just let's get this straight out of the way before we get into any other topics or issues or discussions we're going to have, mate. Mags, what exactly do you think of wrestling Twitter at this moment in time?
Oh, do you know, it's always been for me, it's always been kind of a double-edged sword. There's a really cool part, I've built up some really good friendships, but then they do shit like this, and I just wish that they were all dead.
Oh, why? Okay.
No, I don't, and that is too strong. I wish they were all maimed. Horribly.
Think of the listening numbers, mate. If wrestling Twitter is dead, it's effectively just you, me, and my kids listening back to this show. You know, <it's>
at least the votes would go the way we wanted them to.
Well, they'd all vote for you. My kids would vote for you anyway. So,
as they absolutely should. No, I mean, it was always going to come. I'm actually glad that they picked it because of how the timing fell perfectly. It was the right pick, begrudgingly, wrestling Twitter. So you did nail it.
I just wish
it didn't happen. I just wish it didn't happen. Why didn't we start dropping this episode on like Fridays?
This is the weird thing, and this is the thing I want to sort of explain to anyone listening. Obviously, the very first episode of Chain Wrestling, the subject I put forward was this match, Hogan Slaughter, WrestleMania 7. And the main reason I did that was a little tongue-in-cheek, because Mags had actually just looked at it for another podcast that he was a guest on, and made it very clear to anyone listening how much he hated it. So I thought, just to be funny, I'd link to that match, and it was a bit of a giggle. I didn't think for a second it was going to become an ongoing thing where I tease it just to have a bit of a laugh and a bit of a joke, an excuse to play Real American, which I bloody love as an entrance theme anyway. I'm sure. I didn't think it was going to be that way. And then at the same time, I didn't really know how it was going to end. teasing this little thing and being a bit daft and silly.
There's been weeks where you just hadn't teased it, where you just, it was getting more and more complex, trying to strong arm it in, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, at one stage I used a Celine Dion tour to link to it and stuff like this, so it's getting a bit, but the fact that somehow it came to my attention that this episode was going to drop on the exact 30-year anniversary of that match, I was like, oh man, I've got to string out for a couple more weeks just to make sure, and then put it forward. And again, to put this into context, our show coming out on a Wednesday, Mags and I here with Chain Wrestling coming out on a Wednesday, that wasn't our decision. The great people at Visionaries Global Media, the network that are fantastic and put our shows out for us every week, they gave us Wednesday as a day. We didn't have an option. And well, we did have an option. We just accepted this as the first option they gave. So it's literally just a really weird, surreal coincidence that this has all come together like this, Max, isn't it?
And we couldn't not jump on that and use it for 30 years to the day of the match. Mm-hmm. We had to jump on that, even if it meant that we had to suffer through a 20-minute Hulk Hogan match.
Yeah, that was painful. That was painful indeed. Aye. But before we get to that, mate, how's your week been? Have you been up to anything good in this yet another lockdown week?
Just the absolute same. I've been on a couple of people's podcasts. I was a guest on the DWR podcast, which I think dropped maybe Saturday. But no, it's just been typical working, doing nothing, podcasting, watching UFC. We did have Fastlane, which I still haven't watched because I wasn't staying up till God knows when to watch essentially a house show in the run-up to WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to get to Fastlane in a minute, actually, but we'll cover it now very quickly, seeing as you mention it. I didn't realise it started at like 11 o'clock.
No, I don't think it went on for that long as well.
No, it was done by 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Now, to put this into context, last night I was thinking, oh, shall I stay up for it, shall I not? And I decided not to in the end because I thought, like, same as you, there's not much going on, it's the build-up for WrestleMania, it doesn't seem like that big a deal. I ended up stopping up in the end till like 3 o'clock in the morning watching episodes of this TV show I'm currently working my way through, thinking that the wrestling would still be on, but I'll catch it the next day. If I'd known it started at 11, I probably would have stopped up and watched it, to be honest.
Yeah, I get your point. For me, it'll be one where I'll probably watch it tomorrow night, maybe Wednesday night. Just something to skip through, I suppose. I mean, I know the results. One of the first things I did was check who won. Absolutely no surprise. I think I predicted every single result correctly, which wasn't hard to do with it being the run to WrestleMania. But
yeah
it's definitely going to go down as a forgettable show. I don't really see the point of it. We could have probably done with standard TV shows building the feuds that we've got into WrestleMania. But WWE do what they want to do. I suppose the more interesting news that came out of that show was the fact that WWE have granted Andrade his release.
Yeah, and now everyone's sort of trying to sort of guess, preempt, I suppose, what's going to happen with Charlotte Flair from that, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is quite interesting. I think Andrade's fantastic. I think he's a really, really talented fella. He's got a great look as well. I don't understand how, with WWE, how if I mean, they've always had someone who sort of ticks that box, I guess, the sort of Latin market, I guess, for want of a better term. Mm-hmm. How they haven't looked at this guy and thought money. Because to me, he's money.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen his stuff as La Sombra, starting Los Ingobernables. His NXT stuff was brilliant. Teaming him with Selena Vega was absolute money. And it just didn't translate over to the main roster. I know that a lot of fans are really kind of pissed off at WWE wasting him. But it happens, unfortunately, with when you're Triple H and you're booking a guy and the fans are really kind of gravitating to him, that doesn't necessarily mean that's how Vince McMahon sees that person. And unfortunately, Vince McMahon didn't really see a lot in Andrade. It's allowed him to get his release, the wrestling Twitter have been going mental, wanting him to go to AEW. Personally, I don't think he even fits in there. I think this is a New Japan style wrestler. I think he'd work over there really well. Put him in Los Ingobernables with Naito, get him re-involved in that group. I think that's where I see him going.
Yeah, that's a good shake. I'd be all about that. I'd be happy to watch him over there. Yeah, again, just some of these guys who you look at in NXT or even outside of that, in the likes of TNA or Impact or Japan or wherever they come from, and you look at them and you think they're amazing, and then they get to WWE and it doesn't work out, or they're given a stupid comedy gimmick or whatever. So infuriating sometimes, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I mean, unfortunately, it's the way of WWE. Whenever they are worried, they'll always go back to the stars that they know that they can rely on. The guys like Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins, and it's harder and harder for a new talent to come in and get that huge push. Plus, the Twitter wrestling world are never going to be satisfied. If Andrade would have been pushed to the moon and got all the plaudits and the accolades that he definitely would have deserved, we would have just been mourning about somebody else not getting that push. I mean, how quickly do we move on when look at when Daniel Bryan came back, won the title, everybody quickly moved on to Corfair. Then when Big E won a title, we've moved away from him to Keith Lee. Keith Lee's now out of the picture, so we're moving on to somebody else. We just are never pleased, always kind of like a conveyor belt group of fans.
Yeah. I mean, I get quite frustrated with that sometimes when, people don't. I think you should always try and look at the positive side. There's always going to be stuff on wrestling television, especially WWE television, that doesn't cater to everyone.
You've hit the nail on the head right there. The fact that you're on wrestling Twitter, debating wrestling with other wrestling Twitter fans, you are not WWE's target audience. They know that you are going to watch and bitch about it regardless. They're looking at the young fans to replace the older, kind of disillusioned, disenfranchised fans. We are just a tertiary kind of income supply for WWE. They know that we're going to watch. They know we're going to bitch about it. They want other fans to be invested.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I try not to bitch about it, but it's hard sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
I understand. You know? Yeah, you do get invested with these characters.
Fastlane, for example. I won't go into too much details, Max, since you haven't seen it yet, but Fastlane, there's some good to be seen there. Don't get me wrong. Reigns versus Daniel Bryan, I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good match. I mean, I'm a big Daniel Bryan fan anyway, but it was a good match. And then to counter that, the first two matches, you had the women's tag title match, and then you had the Intercontinental Championship match. The bloody camera angles and the zooming in and out when people throw a punch or a slam, it made my head go funny. It made me feel anxious watching it. It was that, you know.
Yeah, I totally get it. The camera work and the 3D graphics, it's not something that I really enjoy. But if you're a 8 to 10 year old kid, that's exciting. You're seeing like all these it keeps them invested because they have short attention spans anyway. So you switch camera and they're looking at it from a different angle. There's more chance that they're going to stick around and keep watching. Then you throw up the fancy graphics, the relatively quick matches, the relatively safe wrestling that they do. It's all catered to keep the young audience invested, and we are an afterthought.
Yeah, very much so. Very much. I suppose speaking of afterthoughts and Fastlane and so on, something that you'll probably notice that I point out here when you watch the show, but it's WWE in general, I think. Where's everyone's socks gone? They got this fellow Reginald on the pay-per-view, right? Now, I don't watch WWE TV a lot, but I'll try and watch the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Sorry, the pay-per-views, sorry. They got this fellow Reginald on there, and he's got these shoes on, these trousers that don't come down all the way they should, and he's got no socks on. And I was like, okay, maybe that's just him. I don't know. I'm out of touch. I'm not. I've never really had my finger on the pulse when it comes to fashion, I suppose, as my wife and kids will happily inform anyone if they ask. But then you've got Seth Rollins doing the same bloody thing. Mm-hmm. And Corey Graves and all these. Where's everyone's socks gone? Why doesn't people wear socks anymore?
You know, it's something that has annoyed me for about a decade. A lot of the mad drinking buddies used to go out with no socks, proper like leather shoes as well, not like padded or anything like that. And you'd think, if that were me, I'd need plasters on the back of my heels after about 10 minutes because I'd have a massive welt there. It'd just rip away at the skin. I cannot stand the shoes and no socks fashion. It just absolutely annoys me. Skinny jeans annoys me. Cat dye pants annoy me. For me, if you're gonna wear proper formal shoes, you need socks. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, right. And then there's the other side of that. And this isn't necessarily WWE TV. I haven't seen this on WWE television. I'm talking more sort of around here, around, you know, people I see out and about. You see people with jeans or the tracksuit bottoms or whatever and the trousers or whatnot, and they don't go all the way down to their ankles. First of all, if I wore trousers like that when I was that age, I'd have got picked on. They'd have been called ankle bashers, even though they weren't long enough to touch my ankles.
We,
you know, and then you
got Daz here.
Okay, right, yeah. But there's no socks or whatever, right? But then loads of the kids around this way now wear sliders, you know, like the sort of like flip-flops right the middle bit. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, but they wear socks with those.
That's horrific.
But it's not like just one or two. It's all of them. So they've got like these sliders on. I suppose, to me, they look like the shoes that you used to wear in the shower when you play football.
Pool shoes.
Yeah, yeah. And they've got, I know why they do it, because they spent 48 quid on a pair of bloody Nike socks and they pull them really, really high to show the tick. But I'm looking at them, so you don't wear socks when you're wearing proper trousers, but you do wear socks when you've got effectively bloody flip-flops on. Am I that out of touch?
I don't think it's just you. It's me as well, because I don't get it. But when you're spending £300 on a pair of Gucci sliders, like you said, £50 on a pair of Nike socks, you want to look like you're one of the cool gang, I suppose. It looks ridiculous. I laugh at people who do it, but I mean, I dare say when I was a nipper, people were laughing at the fashion that we used to knock around in. So it swings and roundabouts. Fashion has passed us by, Simon. Now we just want a comfy pair of jeans, a pair of trainers, and a black T-shirt. That's me happy.
So I suppose I was always the black T-shirt though, mate. I was a big metal fan, rocker growing up. I mean, speaking about, you know, fashion passing us by, it always has passed me by, I guess.
Just never came.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I can remember, I don't know what age I was, very, very, very early teens, 13 or whatever. I once got like slapped about a bit uptime for wearing a Motley Crue T-shirt. So I suppose that shows I didn't ever fit in, really, you know, but I never wore. Oh yeah, totally, mate. Totally. But I never wore, socks with flip-flops. That's a step too far, pal.
Socks with flip-flops, socks with slippers, anything like that, just, yeah, it boils my piss.
Yeah, idiots, mate, idiots. And I include my daughters in that as well, so if you're listening, and I know you are. speaking of this area around here, Mags, seeing as I didn't sort of look at my week, my past 7 days yet, there's only one real thing that's happened around here, mate. We had a mini riot on our street.
Yes, dropped the message on Twitter, and I thought, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I've explained this several times in the past on this show and the others, I guess. Where I live in Gloucester, the area where I live in Gloucester is not particularly great, but then there's a lot of areas that have trouble and so on. Opposite side of the road, about four doors down, five doors down, whatever, there's a family down there that are notorious for causing trouble. They're always having house parties every weekend. There's always some grief of some sort. Even during these lockdowns, I mean, the police are there quite regularly because they're still having these house parties. Mm-hmm. I was sat in the back room downstairs having a beer or two, headphones on, doing what I normally do. The wife's in the front room, and I could hear something with my headphones in to what was going on outside. And this must have been early hours of the morning, maybe, I guess, something like that. So I've jumped up and I've gone out and I've stuck my head out to have a little look what's going on. Can't really see anything, so I've gone walking out the front of the house. Now I've got to the end of my drive, and God knows how many people there was. There must have been 10, 15 maybe people.
Wow.
And then more joining as well, all out on the street. You can imagine the sort as well, all tracksuit wearing, you know, sort of chavvy types. Mm-hmm. And they've got bloody broom handles and bits of wood. And they're just, it's like a freaking riot scene from a film.
Wow.
And I'm just like, what the, you know, this is insane. The police were called, and they, you know, I think the wife counted 7 cars and 2 vans or something like that turned up. There's an ambulance there as well, because the one kid took an almighty wallop on the head and was bleeding everywhere and so on. But I mean, that's the scenario that's drawn me outside. I want to give you a little insight into the other people that live around me. Okay. As I've come outside, the obvious reason being this mini riot down the road, there's a few other people who have also come outside to look at the noise. First of all, there's one of my neighbours there, who, as I've got to the end of my driveway, has said, "Don't go get involved, Si." And my mind is thinking, why in a million years would you think I'd want to?
Why? Yeah, exactly. Like Simon, the local superhero. Yeah. Any trouble going on, he'll nip in, eat a banana, and out he comes, Banana Man.
Yeah, why would I? Don't go get involved, Si. They've got weapons. And I'm like, yeah, okay, mate, I won't. Thanks for that.
Good job you told me, because I was just about to wade in and just bang all their heads together.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just sort of like, you know, don't get me wrong, the comment came from a nice place, I guess, but it was just a bit of an odd thing to say. So I've turned around to look at this fella, because he's only a couple of doors down. On the other side of the road, a few doors down the opposite direction from where the scrap's happening, there's a little old man shouting, "What's going on? What's going on? I don't know what's going on." But he stood there looking the wrong way down the street. Right? So he's looking, he's got his back to what's happening. Like, don't get me wrong, I know these people. We live on quite a small road. He's not
a blind. WWE referee?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. He's not blind. He's perfectly fine. I've seen him out and about. There's nothing wrong with his eyesight. You know, I've never even seen him wearing glasses. But he's got his back going, "I don't know what all the noise is about. What's going on?" He's got his back to it. And not one time did he turn around. Even when the police were turning up and the blue flashing lights were going, right? And then the best one of all, this little old lady comes out, who always says hello to me whenever I see her. And she's took the opportunity to have a nice sort of chin wag with me at 2 o'clock in the morning with a riot going on 100 yards down the road. And it's literally the case of, "Oh, hiya, love. I haven't seen you for a while. How are you? Is everything okay? How's the family?" And I'm thinking, I kind of want to get back in my house. Do you know what I mean? But she's like completely oblivious again to what's going on, because she's more interested in having a chat to what I've been up to, you know?
Wow. I mean, while she had you there, I suppose it was a great time to have a little bit of a catch-up, but you'd think she'd be more interested in the shenanigans happening across the road.
Oh, mate, there's some weird people around here. I mean, I think a lot of it's to do with drugs, but there's a weird people around here. There's another fella who just came out literally in his pants, and I'm talking like, you know, Tiny Whiteys or whatever, just stood there with a roll-up cigarette and in his pants, just... And he sort of gives me a nod and carries on. I assume it's a roll up. It might have been some, you know, might have a joint. I don't know. But he stood there just in his pants, just watching what's going on. Wow. And I'm sort of looking up and down the road, thinking this is literally a snippet of where I live. My God.
I mean, I can totally empathise with you. I used to live in some pretty scummy places in Burnley. Burnley's not exactly the nicest place to live at the best of times, but there is some certain areas which are pretty low class, so we had a lot of that happening around us. But I've come up in the world, and the area of Burnley I live in now, the most trouble we get is when cars park with two wheels upon on the side of the road and kind of ruin the grass verges. Our local parish council gets quite up in arms about that.
Yeah, I can imagine, mate.
And I don't think it quite touches the same levels as a riot or that stabbings as you get in down there in Gloucester. But yeah, we do get kind of heated when we see cars parked on the grass. We don't like it around these ends.
you just get a random bloke in his pants going, oh, these parking reindeer. You know,
usually with a top hat and a monocle and smoking a cigarette, but out of one of those plastic holders, what's about 2 foot long.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Shall we take to Twitter, Mags, and have a little look at what we've had this week?
Let's do it.
Okay. As mentioned on last week's episode and on the show's Twitter account during the last few days at @chain_wrestling, Mags and I were looking for storylines or characters or angles or anything at all wrestling based that just disappeared or didn't have a proper conclusion, or the conclusion was given as a sort of very secondary daft afterthought. You know the sort of thing that just gets dropped completely out of the blue and so on. I mean, the example I gave was Mr. McMahon's limo. He gets in the limo, explodes. And obviously the Benoit thing happened, so it was all dropped. But what happened there? He was literally in a limousine that exploded. You know, rich dude should be dead. Do you know what I mean? It's like he should not be around anymore. So one of the first ones we have here is from Big Daddy Ghoul at Psychosocial SB on Twitter.
Shane, a great guy.
Yeah, okay. I don't think I know this fella, to be honest, but... hi, Shane. Nice of you to reach out. Appreciate that, mate. The anonymous Raw general manager.
Yes. This is a great shout.
Yeah, I think so. He feels like it was revealed maybe 3 years later or something along those lines, but still thinks it counts. And yeah, Shane, definitely 100% it counts. This one is one of the ones that really sticks in my mind because you were guessing for so bloody long, weren't you? And I thought it was a really, really good idea, Mags.
Yeah. This storyline, actually, it took about 4 years. If you remember, it started, I think, about June 2010, carried on for the majority of that year, into 2011. Then it disappeared for a little while, came back in 2012, and then again in 2014. So you're looking at that, a four-year gap where they ran with this with no real outcome. And then on Raw, I think it was the Raw 1000 episode, the WWE claimed it was Hornswoggle behind the whole thing, which I totally agree is that was not satisfactory for me. You can tell that they had run with this with no real kind of end game in sight and then just dropped it. And the Hornswoggle was just the way to kind of quell the questions about it. Going back to like the early days, you would get little hints to who the person was. A lot of like kind of red herrings, but a lot of hints that could potentially have named the person. I remember at the time you were looking at the likes of Vicky Guerrero was potentially the anonymous GM. It was, I think, Triple H at one time was mentioned, Stephanie. But then, yeah, it ended up fizzling out.
Yeah. And you'd have that that noise, wouldn't you? That sound effect. And then Michael Cole normally would be saying, can I have everyone's attention? I've had a message from the anonymous Raw general manager. And is it, and I quote, was what he used to say as well, wasn't it?
And I quote, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, bloody hell.
I mean, they had some really big storylines as well. I mean, Cena was heavily involved in the storyline with it. Punk, The Rock, he once smashed up the laptop because Michael Cole kept going back to it.
Yep. And it's funny as well, because now when that noise, that tone goes off on someone's phone, I still instantly think of that Raw general manager and Michael Cole standing there. So it's had an impact. I mean, you're saying this, what, 10 years ago? Yeah. It's had a bloody impact, you know, so that's a great shout, that is. Shane, you said it was, wasn't it, the guy's name?
Yeah, Shane.
Yeah, that's a great shout. Yeah, thanks, Shane. Really appreciate that, mate. Thanks for messaging in. At UTT Rob, a bit more of a modern one here. Rob says he knows it was played out on Twitter, but A, that doesn't count, and B, it was awful. The Nightmare Collective just ending on television. He was loving the Brandy Rhodes promos and the hints that Voodoo might even get involved. Now, for me, yeah, I agree with that one as well. I think it was odd for quite a while. I wasn't 100% convinced. I wasn't too sure about how this was working. With the whole thing of obviously Brandy being off screen or even on the social media, not this crazy lady that she was portraying on Dynamite. Mm-hmm. However, when it started to kind of gain a bit of momentum and I started to get into it a bit, it's when they kind of canned it. So that was an odd one for me as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think you and Rob are both wrong. This should have been. This was one of those angles that should have definitely been canned, and it's for a lot of the reasons that you said. The disconnect between Brandy and her on social media, and Brandy as this leader of this voodoo nightmare collective, it didn't work at all for me, and it felt like they were just trying to strong arm Brandy into becoming a big deal in AEW and in the fans' eyes, and I feel that she's probably become more of a big deal just being herself, just being Brandy as she is. I think that's the best kind of character she's had. This Nightmare Collective leader, the stuff with Awesome Kong, and then Melissa. It just didn't connect with me at all. I felt it took away a lot of momentum from the Dark Order, who were doing a very similar gimmick at that time. And now, obviously, they've transitioned into kind of more of a comedy role, which is working brilliantly for them. But, yeah, I agree that this needed to be canned, and I was happy that it did.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That 90s Wrestling Podcast, at 90s Wrestling Pod on Twitter, Mordecai. Do you remember him?
I do.
The old white beard and all that nonsense.
A big weird cross. I think he was brought in to be a kind of real big challenger to Undertaker, but he shit the bed in the ring and it just never happened.
Didn't he end up being a vampire on the ECW reboot? Wasn't that him, Kevin Furtick?
I think his name on ECW was Kevin Thorne.
Yeah, but isn't his real name something like Kevin Furtick or Kevin Furtick or something like that?
I believe so, yeah.
And he had that lass with him. There was something quite sexy about that gothic lass, you know. There's something quite hot, I reckon, about a scary little gothic lass. Do you know what I mean?
I'm not one to kink shame, so if that's what you're into.
I'm not saying I'm into it. I'd be far too scared. If I, like, say, for example, I went on a blind date and someone, like, he was a bit like a. Bear in mind, I'm a big rocker and that myself. But somebody turned up looking that vampire-ish. Obviously, if it was in the day, I'd be all right, because I'd be thinking, okay, sunshine, sound, you know. But if it was at night time, I'd be a bit like, oh, I ain't sure about this, you know. That freaked me out a little bit, maybe.
I mean, it does say to me that if she did try and bite your neck, she'd struggle to get blood because it would have gone somewhere else. It would have all been gathered somewhere else.
Oh, I don't know about that, mate. You bite my neck, it wouldn't be blood anyway. It'd be ale, I expect. No. You know, I cut myself. I think what comes out's about, I don't know, 50% proof, potentially. Scott Robertson, at Scott WWE F1. He said there was something that happened with Booker T where he got a note saying, "I still remember," or something along those lines. Don't know if that was ever finished. And I can remember this, and I can tell you, no, it wasn't.
I read the tweet, and I vaguely remember it happening. I don't remember the context, but I also don't remember it finishing. So, yeah, I'd be interested to hear what the take is from that.
Yeah, definitely. What we should try and do, actually, is maybe... Maybe
solve
them. We'll freak Booker out a bit. Maybe if we all start tweeting him, "I still remember," just randomly, and just see if he responds or says anything. You know?
Yeah. Just like, "We have give up. It was meant to be so and so. It didn't work. Let it go."
Yeah, exactly. Something else that is the same, very much the same ilk, that makes me to the point where I tweeted Shane McMahon on a regular basis asking him the answer to this question. Millwall Chris, at Millwall Chris 1 on Twitter, Shane / Vince McMahon and the lockbox. What was in that lockbox?
Who knows? That was very much an annoying one, very much so.
I mean, in a way, logically, I suppose, the lockbox was there to try and force Vince to do something, wasn't it? He didn't want secrets or the contents coming out. So Vince went along with whatever Shane wanted. So then Shane put the lockbox back and didn't tell anyone. So in a way, I suppose, Shane, you could admire him because he's kept his word, hasn't he? He's, you know, he's not stitched his old man up by going against him anyway and telling you what's in the lockbox.
Exactly right. I mean, he might want to keep that for another day, keep that under his hat, just in case Vince is a dick again and he has to pull out the threat of the lockbox.
Yeah. So in a way, this is a wrestling storyline that did get a conclusion and was really, really sensible, which is unusual, I suppose.
Yeah, just not the conclusion that we wanted.
No, exactly. Have you got any you can think of, Mags?
Oh, I've got a couple.
Okie doke.
First, and I can't understand how this has not been mentioned on wrestling Twitter. It's one that has annoyed me since the whole storyline went down. So let's go to King of the Ring. I think it was King of the Ring 1999, and we got a briefcase. And in this briefcase was a contract for the controlling stake of WWE. We had Stone Cold, who was a part owner, and we had Vince McMahon, who was the other part owner. And after taking a massive whooping from basically beating both McMahon's Shane and Vince McMahon, Stone Cold went to climb the ladder. And then all of a sudden, the briefcase moved and mm-hmm. it rose up just out of Austin's grasp. This meant that Shane and Vince had the time to recover and they were able to end up winning the match and getting the briefcase. But we never found out who raised that briefcase. There was never no conclusion to it. Rumours were going around that it was meant to be Boss Man, but that was denied. And we never got a satisfactory explanation of what happened and why that briefcase rose when Stone Cold went to claim it.
Perhaps it's a really, really dark family secret. So to make sure that nobody finds out about it, it gets put away in a lockbox. Right?
It could actually be.
Perhaps that's what it is, mate, yeah. Remember GTV as well?
I certainly do. That was I mean, I was always really interested in it to see what was happening. It was fun seeing these wrestlers in these embarrassing predicaments. But it was another thing that I think they started and didn't quite have an end game. Mm. A lot of the rumours at the time was that it was Gold Dust, or that it apparently was meant to be Tom Green as well, the comedian. But yeah, it was just one of those kind of things that fizzled out and we never really got to see again.
Yeah, so annoying, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely.
Samoa Joe getting kidnapped in TNA as well was another one I put out on Twitter as a suggestion.
Or bad ninjas.
Yeah, and then like nothing happened with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was then, just happened.
Another one with Samoa Joe where he had a big bloody knife where he threatened to take out Scott Hall, and then Scott Hall returned about a week later and he just had a little scratch on his face, which would not have bloodied the knife as much as it did.
Mm. Well, I don't know. Alcohol thins the blood, doesn't it? And Scott Hall,
he likes
a beverage.
He's 65% proof.
Yeah, so perhaps he did just give him a little nick and it just poured out like a fountain, man.
Yeah, that is very, very possible. Another one that I had, going back to 2010, if you remember, around that time we had the Nexus. And they, for some reason, I think it was at Bragging Rights, they went and they targeted Undertaker in his Buried Alive match with Kane, and they helped Kane get the victory, held Undertaker down whilst Kane hit him with the urn. And then in the shows afterwards, you got Wade Barrett teasing that beating up the Undertaker was just the start. He was leader of the Nexus, and they had huge plans. And then nothing came of it. Absolutely nothing. Apparently he was meant to be a rumoured opponent for Undertaker at WrestleMania, but we didn't even get that. There was just nothing at all came of it.
Yeah, it's just so baffling. The Core as well. Do you remember The Core?
Yeah.
Speaking of the Nexus, what happened to that?
the Nexus 2.0, yeah, that was just a trying to keep hold of that momentum that the Nexus had. And yeah, it didn't work. Absolutely.
Yeah, they just vanished. They just disappeared, didn't they?
Yeah, they just ended up breaking up, I think.
Yeah. So annoying when you could potentially have a breakup storyline and give people something to do on television.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than they just disappear for a couple of weeks and then come back and act like they haven't met before and stuff.
Yeah, I think if I remember rightly, there were some matches on that Raw and SmackDown where Barrett walked out on Gabriel and Heath Slater, and then them two just went their own separate ways, and that was it. There was no kind of satisfying end to it. It was just like, yeah, we don't know where this story's going, lads. See you later.
No, I don't remember those matches, actually, but at least they tried to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that's what Booker T's note meant. Somebody still does remember those matches, but I don't. Yeah. I don't remember them, you know.
So I've got a couple more still.
Yeah, go for it, man.
One that you will definitely remember, the Vince's bastard son.
Okay.
If you remember, there was a long-winded storyline that a wrestler on the WWE roster was Vince's son. And we got hints that it was Stone Cold. Vince took a paternity test and it wasn't Stone Cold. And after quite a lot of rigmarole, it comes down to Finlay was allegedly going to be Vince's son. And then it wasn't Finlay at all. It was actually Hornswoggle. He got the nickname then, Little Bastard. This was obviously before he became Hornswoggle. apparently, it was meant to be the obvious pick at that time, which was Mr. Kennedy. So he did the Mr. Kennedy. He kind of had the same, I suppose, look as Vince, same kind of attitude. And I think that would have worked really well. But he failed the wellness policy and got suspended. So they had to scramble for a new storyline when he got suspended and released. So, yeah, that was an annoying storyline.
Yeah, I remember that now. You mentioning Kennedy as the main possibility, that does ring a bell, yeah.
And then the last one, and probably the most annoying, just because of how quickly it was dropped. So do you remember a wrestler? Well, I say a wrestler because technically he didn't wrestle in WWE, but in around December 2008, there was a promo for a wrestler coming called Hade Vanson.
Hade Vanson,
yes. Very sinister, very dark, and he was coming to the WWE to fulfill his prophecy. He'd spent his life studying darkness. He was essentially going to be a creepy kind of cult leader, probably a little bit more darker than we got with Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family, that really kind of evil cult leader. But 2 weeks later, WWE abandoned it. The guy never appeared on TV again, and he was released from his contract. So we got that one solo promo saying that he was coming to fulfill his prophecy, and that was it.
I have watched the darkness my entire life. I have studied it. I have dedicated my existence to it. And it has led me here as a witness to your punishment made flesh. I saw righteousness. I saw purity. All things hidden beneath the shadow of evil. And I wanted more. For over a decade, I have searched, and now I have found others who believe, who will follow, and I have shown them the way. Your immortal power is all that I require. Now, the prophecy shall be realized. Your annihilation will not be in vain. You will live on. I shall be your vessel.
I'm looking the fella up now. I don't remember this at all.
Looked a little bit wonky-eyed for me. But I remember him vividly. I remember the character vividly because it was one of those that if you see it, it sticks in your mind that this is, it was quite a different take to what we had in WWE around that time. And I think he would have stood out. But yeah, it didn't because he never appeared ever again.
It says here that he was actually British.
Yeah.
And he trained many future stars, notably Drew McIntyre, mm-hmm. Paul Burchill. Oh, do you remember Paul Burchill when he was a pirate? That didn't go anywhere either, did it?
I remember seeing Paul Burchill before he came to WWE, and the guy was technically phenomenal. He did a move called C4, which is like a standing shooting star press, and he did like a standing Spanish fly. Really technical, technically skilled. And then he came to WWE. He was a pirate, and then he also, there was hints of incest with him and his sister.
Oh yeah, he wanted to bone his sister, didn't he?
It was very, very weird.
Yeah, that was strange. His sister was a good-looking lass, but that's just wrong.
Yeah, Katie Lee, I think she was called.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, what a strange time.
And then we'll get to the coup de grace, the last one, and another one which I'm surprised Wrestling Twitter hasn't picked up on. We mentioned GTB. That was potentially linked with Goldust. Mm-hmm. But there was a period in Goldust's career where he'd had enough in WWE, and he went back to WCW.
Oh, I was going to bring this up, yeah. I know where you're going, mate. I know exactly where you're going, yep.
I'm going with Seven.
Yeah. And he came out all painted up white and mm-hmm. cut this really weird promo.
Well, he technically shit on the gimmick in the middle of the ring. But before that, about 2 or 3 weeks before that, we got vignettes, and it was a kid's bedroom, dark, raining, and then stood at the window, Dustin Rhodes, all in pretty much as gold dust, but all in white with red underneath his eyes, an Undertaker style hat, black kind of sadomasochistic gear on. It pretty much looked like he was going to kidnap the child. Absolutely horrific looking. Then we get that in-ring promo where he absolutely shit on WWE at first for the Goldust gimmick, shit on WCW for this gimmick, and then said, I'm here to be Dustin Rhodes, and that's it. So apparently the reason that got canned was because WCW had to deal with Turner's standard and practices at that time, and they put the promos out before the guy in charge at Turner could give it a yay or a nay, and he saw it and went, absolutely fucking not. This is not happening.
We'll have no child abducting white-faced freaks on our show, thank you very much.
We've got to have the NWO.
Yeah. Let me guess who wrote that. Was this around Bro era? Was that the sort of time?
Potentially. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, God bless Vince Russo. Such brilliant, wonderful car crash, terrible television. There's one more I got in my mind, mate, that sticks out that still makes me wonder what happened with it, you know. Do you remember when we had the general managers of Raw and SmackDown quite early on?
Okay.
Way back when the brand splits happened, like I think it was the first brand split. And okay. Stephanie McMahon was SmackDown general manager and Eric Bischoff was Raw general manager. And then they sort of teased a little bit of flirting back and forth for a little while. And then they had a full-on snog on a pay-per-view.
They did.
And then it just disappeared. But then Bischoff also, he had a full-on snog with Linda as well. And nothing came of that.
I mean, the Linda one, oh, I mean, oh, that's Jesus. But the Steph one, yeah, you would have thought there would have been something there. Because Vince has always wanted to have a Steph sex stories. He's pushed many times for her to be pregnant or married. And it's always either with him or with Shane. He's a weird guy, is Vince. But yeah, I'm surprised that that one didn't go anywhere, because having two general managers in that kind of relationship would have worked well. We would have had a fairly decent story out of it, but it was
The history with Bischoff and McMahon as well, going back, that could have been quite an interesting storyline, yeah. Mm-hmm. Really strange. He is an odd bloke, isn't he, Vince? I mean, I know that's stating the bleeding obvious from what we know from the professional wrestling world, but the way he constantly would be like, pushing Steph into these situations, or maybe she liked it, maybe she asked to be in these situations. I don't know.
Apparently she really, really stood her ground. She obviously, when she came in as part of the Undertaker and Austin angle, where she was put on a crucifix, she agreed with that because she wanted to get into the business. But the incest stuff, yeah, it was a hard no. Then when Vince said, oh, well, if you don't want the storyline with me, how about we do it with Shane? And again, it was like, no, I am that's a line too far, Dad. I'm not having yours or Shane's kid. Leave it. And yeah, it got dropped.
And then he was like, what about Eazy-E? Let's have his kid. Come on, Steph. and then that got dropped as well. And Bischoff, back then, you think about it, he's snogging McMahon's all over the place, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was a horny little devil.
He was. Perhaps that's how he's got in the Hall of Fame this year. Perhaps he's got a step further. And now he's like snogging other McMahon's like Vince. And they're like, oh, I'll put you in the Hall of Fame, mate. You know?
Or well, Trips. He could have had a do on Trips now.
He could have had a go on Trips. Oh, my word.
I mean, it's actually interesting that he's been picked to go in the Hall of Fame, knowing that he's been on AEW quite a number of times recently. And anyone who's been anywhere near involved in AEW have been kind of like ostracized. I the only one I remember getting any kind of recognition from WWE was when Billy Gunn was part of DX and he went in the Hall of Fame. And they still had to have a dig about him being part of a pissant company.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he's gone in. Maybe it's a case of getting him into the Hall of Fame. He signs a Legends deal and he then stays away from AEW.
Yeah, potentially. I like Bischoff. He's great.
Yeah, I do. I think he's one of wrestling's better brains. The NWO stuff got convoluted, but I think he's given a hard time for how much he turned WCW from a company that was losing money to a company that was on the tip of everybody's tongue, the hottest thing in wrestling. If he didn't do half of the things he did, we wouldn't have wrestling as it is today. Things like monthly pay-per-views, which sometimes you can be annoyed at, but it has brought more eyes to the product. But mainstream appeal, he was the guy who got rap music and MTV and Saturday Night Live and things like Letterman and involved. If it wasn't for him, we'd still be potentially in the time where we were having country and music stars and things like that. So Bischoff has done a lot of good for the wrestling world.
Yeah, without a doubt. And he got to tongue the McMahon ladies. What a lucky fella.
Lucky for one.
Yeah,
not so lucky for the other.
If you were to kiss a McMahon, Mags, I mean, we'll take Steph out of the equation because she's the obvious choice. If you were to kiss a McMahon, which one would you go with?
Oh.
If you had to, there was a gun against your head, you had to kiss a McMahon.
I mean, then it would be Linda, wouldn't it? But it'd be like kissing sawdust.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose. It would be next in line.
I think Vince would be an aggressive kisser. I think he's the kind of person that if he'd kiss you, it wouldn't be necessarily you got to kiss him. And the problem with Shane is he would be a sweaty kisser. Be very sloppy.
He's sweating all over the place, wouldn't you?
Yeah, so I think you'd have to go with Vince. Shane, unfortunately, would be the last pick.
Well, there we go. So, I mean, if wrestling Twitter is interested, we've just ranked our order of McMahon's We Would Kiss. So, and we've been talking about potential incest between a pirate and his sister earlier on. This has taken a dark turn, Mags.
It's what happens on this show.
It is. It is. But I'm afraid we're going to have to take another turn down a dark, dark street. 50-odd minutes into the show, mate, we can't delay it anymore. We've got to talk a little bit of wrestling, my friend.
Okay.
Shall we do it?
And, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter.
Hello, brother. This is NWA WCW Enhancement Talent, Randy Hogan, baby. Being in the ring with the Road Warriors, Vader, Abdul the Butcher, Midnight Express and all them guys, let me tell you, it was dang rough. But not as rough as listening to Cyan Maggs on that Chain Wrestling show, brother. What you gonna do when this pair of fools, Cy Maggs and Chain Wrestling, brother, runs wild on you?
Okay, WrestleMania 7, Hulk Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter. The day Hogan saved the world from the evil Iraqi sympathizer and all things evil in the planet, universe, anywhere, because Hogan is our hero. Two promos before the match, Mags, wasn't there? Slaughter and Adnan with Sean Mooney. That was interesting. The only notes I've really got about that is just how big is Sergeant Slaughter's chin?
Yeah, he was pushing that bad boy out, really pushing it out. We got the Iraqi kind of like taunt from General Adnan. The only word that you could pick out was when he said Hulk Hogan. Then you had Slaughter, who seemingly understood what was going on because he knew the right time to chip in. He had a kind of theme to his promo. He wanted people to know that they were playing by his rules. Everything was by his rules. Called the Hogan fans puker maniacs. Called Hogan the immortal slam. I thought it was an interesting promo. Poor Sean Mooney got all that sweat all over his face, though. Poor bloke.
Just like if you were to kiss Shane. I mean, really growly, wasn't he? Slaughter, this is not Shane. Really growly he was as well, wasn't he? Really sort of, you maggots, Hulkamaniacs. Do you think he talks like that all the time?
Yeah, I think he does. I think he lives the life of Sergeant Slaughter, stolen valor and all. But I thought he was really good at what he did. He gets a lot of grief for being champion, but I think he did really well in the role. Apparently, he wasn't very pleased with the role, but he gave it his all, and he made you believe that he had turned his back on the old Stars and Stripes. Really, like I said, really gravelly voice. I think that's one of the best things about Sergeant Slaughter is his promo work is very, very underappreciated. I thought he really kind of sells that Sergeant character very much like a Full Metal Jacket style.
Yeah. Just walking around like everyday life talking like that, that'd be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Just Mrs. Slaughter, pissed off, like, come on, maggots. Look, Sarge, shut the fuck up and eat your breakfast.
Do you want a coffee? Of course I want a coffee. Goes to the shop and he's like, I need to buy a razor. And the shop attendant opens up that little cabinet. He's like, no, I need six. Look at the size of this chin. You know, that sort of thing.
For him, disposables are one use and one use only.
Yeah. We're then greeted by the great big orange one as he stands with Mean Gene Oakland and talks about a new Hogan for 1991 and various secret weapons he may have, which is a little bit concerning considering the video that we saw him in later years. A typical Hogan promo, really, Mags, wasn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, did his shirt rip, said that he was a different man because of the attack from Slaughter the week earlier, but he was gonna essentially, how you pushed this for 4 months, he was going to save the world. I remember an earlier promo where he said that once he beat Sergeant Slaughter, Iraq would surrender, and the war would be over because Hogan beat Sergeant Slaughter. So, I mean, he believed in himself, said his prayers, drank his milk, did his had his vitamins, was a little bit racist. He did everything that Hulk Hogan needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, very quickly, I suppose, a bit more of a serious tone. I want to make sure it's very clear to everyone listening that whereas I do and have done many, many weeks poked fun at this whole Hogan Slaughter storyline and Hogan stating he's going to save, well, me stating Hogan will save the world and so on, I am literally poking fun at the WWF's ridiculousness and Hogan's ridiculousness. Nothing at all to do with the United States of America in general or the troops or anything like that, you know, especially the troops that are out serving at the time. It's just the ridiculousness of the WWF, Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan in this whole scenario, thinking that Hogan's going to... Don't worry, wrestling is always capitalized on the sort of fear factor of, for want of a better term, foreign heels, I guess, through different eras in time. I mean, in the 40s, 50s, whatever, the Germans were the bad guys because of what went on in the Second World War. Yeah, and the Russians a few, because of that. So, but it is so cringeworthy. I think you've got to poke fun at it, if that makes sense. And you talking about that promo there, Mags, that Hogan saying that the Iraqis
Saddam would, it would surrender, he said.
Yeah, yeah. It just sums up how ridiculous and in bad taste this whole thing is, man. Yeah. And you've got to laugh at it because it is that awful.
It absolutely is.
As we get to the match, then we have some celebrities enter. Three of them. I didn't really know who any of these people were. Regis and Lee are show people, aren't they?
Regis was, I think it was on like the American version of like the Breakfast Show. He had a partner called Kathy Lee, and they'd have that. They'd speak to like celebrities and do interviews, stuff like that. Alex Trebek, the other man, he was the host of Jeopardy.
Okay, I don't think I've ever seen Jeopardy.
Wow, you have lived a sheltered life, sir.
I am, mate. I gotta be sheltered living around here. I was got a broomstick on my head. You know,
the woman. I have absolutely no idea who she was. Marla Maples, she was called. Absolutely no clue who she was. Still don't have a clue now, 30 years on. So she really didn't have much of an impact on me.
So this Cyril Regis, like you said, he was like breakfast TV, celebrity guests, sit down, chat show sort of thing.
What did you call him?
Cyril Regis. Oh, he played for West Brom, didn't he, Cyril Regis? What's this guy's name?
Do you mean the footballer, Cyril Regis? No, he was called Regis Philbin.
Right, okay. I thought Regis was his last name.
No, it's his first name.
Okay.
Cyril Regis.
Yeah, Cyril Regis, I know, he used to play for West Brom, didn't he? Blatantly the wrong fella. What an absolute melt I am. But yeah, I thought Regis was this guy's last name as well. I just thought he had a different first name.
Regis Philbin.
Okay. But he's like the American Lorraine Kelly sort of thing then?
Kind of, yeah. He's one of them, like loose women.
Cyril Regis is a loose woman.
No, he'd probably be more like the Richard to Kathy Lee's Judy.
Ah, okay. Okay, I get you. No worries. Okay. Cyril Regis is a loose woman. Brilliant.
That's the title of the show.
Yeah, potentially. There, right there. Sergeant Slaughter comes out to...
Getting the jobber's entrance as well.
Oh, coming out
as the champion, it annoys. I mean, I know Hogan was the star. I get that Hogan must pause, yada, yada, yada. But in a championship match, the champion comes out second. I hate it with every fibre of my wrestling fan being.
Yeah, I'm not a fan either. Shawn Michaels, for quite a while, used to come out when he was the heel Intercontinental Champion, would come out first. Mm-hmm. And they tried to explain that away as it's champion's choice and he chooses to come out first so he gets to pose in his mirror longer. I didn't mind that as much because they did kind of semi-explain it.
Yeah, but this one, you know it was because Hogan was the star.
Yeah, yeah. And Slaughter comes out to... I mean, I don't really want to call it an entrance theme because it's not. It's it's terrible. I mean, it was, you know, making me feel, I was getting anxiety attacks, mate, listening to this bloody constant drum roll that led to nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was horrific. It was worse than Right to Censor. You know, that beeping alarm sound.
Yeah, but it worked. It made the fans absolutely hate him. They were fuming, especially with the fact that they were waving the Iraqi flag around as well. Yeah, mm-hmm. These fans were not happy. Not happy in the slightest.
That's right. And these are fans as well that are in a much smaller arena than the initial venue they booked. Mm-hmm. If you remember, WrestleMania 6 ran an advert for WrestleMania 7 being at the, was it LA Coliseum, I think it was called, the big almost stadium type effort that they'd ran at like WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 6 in Toronto. Was a big arena as well, wasn't it?
Yep.
But tickets didn't sell. WWE cited security issues.
Yeah, they said that there was a bomb threat at the they said there's a bomb threat at the Coliseum because of this storyline, when really it was because people were not interested in this story. Or a lot more fans were not interested. The fans who were actually in attendance, they were harped up for it.
Oh, they were wild, weren't they?
Yeah, they absolutely were. I still think there was a little bit of piped in audio, but all in all, these fans were ravenous for this match.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Bruce Pritchard on his podcast was talking about this match a while back, and he said that the Super Bowl went ahead because the government and the FBI and so on paid for their security, and they had planes in the sky to stop bombers and all this sort of stuff, but they wouldn't pay for the WWF security to run something similar at the LA. I keep saying LA Coliseum. If that's the wrong venue, I do apologize to anyone listening, but that's what's in my head for some reason.
Well, I think you're right. This was at the Memorial Sports Arena, which I think is it's adjacent to the Coliseum.
Yeah. Yeah, so they had to switch venues. They'd already outsold the smaller venue, apparently, when the decision was made, though. I mean, that's awkward, isn't it? How'd you work that out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, do you just pack it to the rafters? And I mean, it was packed to the rafters. Mm. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of the fans, I mean, packed to the rafters and that, did you see this dude? He pops up on quite a few of these pay-per-views around this time. He's got, like, the white tank top, sort of white muscle top on, really short hair and a gold chain, and he's having a wonderful time in the crowd. Well,
wearing the biggest glasses known to man.
Yeah, him. And he's loving it. He's got like a Hulk, a Roddy Piper sort of tank top, muscle top on. He's really proud of his arms and shoulders. He's having a fantastic time.
Fans back then were absolutely ravenous. I mean, I saw a group of fans where they printed out Hulkamania will live forever on a dot matrix printer, which must have took them absolutely ages, used up an absolute ton of ink, and they kept it so neat that it didn't even rip.
It still had all the holes down the side of the paper, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Earlier in the show, Mags, earlier on in the same show, those same fans near the front row printed off something similar for the Heart Foundation as well.
Really? So
yeah,
their ink bill must be through the roof.
They must be really rich people. The match, I mean, Hogan comes out to an absolute wild pop, waving the flag and so on. The match starts with Sergeant Slaughter, General Adnan, and Hulk Hogan. It seemed like they were all just going for a bit of a jog. They're just doing a couple of laps of the ring. I suppose, you know, even back in 1991, it's important to make sure you get all those steps in, I suppose, for the day. They're all going for a little leisurely stroll around the outside of the ring. And then at that stage, you notice as well how awesome some of the mustaches are in this time. Howard Finkel is there, not ring announcing for this match, but he sat ringside. You've got Hogan with his glorious tash. General Adnan and Sergeant Slaughter going two different ways. One's really big and bushy, one's really small and trimmed. Good selection of mustaches on display for us, Mags, I feel.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also a good selection of bald spots on people's hairs with the Fink. With Sarge, and obviously with Bald Spot Extraordinaire, Hulk Hogan. There was a fun comment where Hogan was accused of pulling Sarge's hair, and Bobby the Brain went, "Oh no!" Gorilla said he hasn't got any hair to pull, and I was like, "That's ironic." When you're looking at Hulk Hogan there, who's kept hold of the very little hair he's got for 50 years.
Yeah, and in a way, I suppose it's really nice to see as well, isn't it, with the political differences between Adnan, Slaughter and Hogan, that they can be united by hair and facial hair fashion, I suppose. They've got something in common to try and bridge that gap after their match, I suppose. They could sit around afterwards enjoying a nice mug of tea and exchanging moustache grooming tips, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, Hogan has borrowed Slaughter's moustache wax.
Yeah. Hogan and Slaughter eventually tie up and they roll around the ropes for a bit, and then they tie up again, and you get the whole Hogan pushes him down, and the crowd go absolutely batshit crazy for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's not going to be many times in this match that I'll give props, but I've got to give props to Hogan and Slaughter. They knew how to keep the pace slow and really work that crowd. And it's something that you'd see Hogan revisit at WrestleMania 18 with The Rock. He knew that he could get away with doing so little, but getting such a massive reaction. And that's what happened, at least in the early parts of this match, where there was very little wrestling, very little contact between the two. Like I said, they rolled along the ropes for a good 3 or 4 minutes, and the crowd just absolutely ate everything up.
Yeah, yeah, the crowd's wild, it's insane. And then it all starts to go a little bit silly for me.
Yes.
If it's not silly enough already with all the Bald Spots and the tashes and the flag waving and Hogan is going to save the world and so on, it all gets a bit silly then, because Slaughter starts hitting Hogan with a chair right in front of the referee.
And he does nothing. Absolutely nothing about it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The chair shots were so weak as well.
Yeah, it's like he had something on his back and he was trying to just brush it off.
Exactly, it was just like brushing it off, wiping the sweat from Hogan's back away with a padded steel chair.
Perhaps Shane had been kissing his back. you get a spot where it looks like Sergeant Slaughter wants to throw Hogan into the ropes for an Irish whip. Or Hogan wants to do that and Slaughter doesn't quite get it, and it almost looks like they're holding hands and have a little bit of a dance in the corner for a second or two. And then shortly after that, Sergeant Slaughter goes to stamp on Hogan's hand and misses by a bloody mile.
He absolutely does. This was never going to be technically proficient wrestling. You've got Slaughter, who was a decent wrestler, and then you've got Hogan, who got away with doing so little and knowing so little, but surviving on his charisma and on the rabid love from the fan base. So it was never going to be 5 stars in the Tokyo Dome style wrestling, but there were some things that were just so wonky in this match. The times when Adnan would get involved, I think there was even one point when Adnan was trying to get Earl to the ringside when Slaughter was going for a pin.
He screws up a couple of times.
Yeah, it was so weird.
There's a time when Hogan goes to the second rope, which looks bloody strange anyway. Hogan goes to the second rope.
Off and Adnan, the double axe handle.
Yeah, and Adnan comes up and grabs his leg. And you can always see Hogan trying to tell him to, you know, bugger off, pal.
Yeah,
because that's not quite when that should be happening. And then Hogan goes to the top rope, which again is weird as hell to look at. And that's when Adnan grabs his leg and Hogan allows the distraction to happen for Slaughter to kind of take control. So maybe he got a bit excited and, you know, sort of jumped in there a bit early, potentially there, old Adnan. But again, like you said, Adnan jumps up on the apron to distract the referee, which is obviously meant, from me watching at home, it comes across like it's obviously meant for Slaughter to be able to grab a chair and hit Hogan with in a moment, because that's the next very thing they do. But he's distracting Slaughter from counting Slaughter's pin. And Slaughter's basically got the match won at this stage. Hogan's led there waiting to hear a two before kicking out. He's down for a 5, 6, 7, whatever it is. So, you know, in my eyes, Slaughter, you know, in theory, should have really won the match there.
And he wasn't even angry. You'd think he'd be absolutely fuming at Adnan because he's missing the spot. But then Adnan gets down from the ring. Earl goes and does the attempted pin. We get the two count. Then Adnan gets back up and we get the spot that I think they were meant to do. Adnan obviously jumping the gun. But before we actually got to that bit, one thing that really annoys me about this match is we get a camel clutch. No, we don't. We get a Boston Crab.
Oh, my God.
And they're selling it really well. Hogan's struggling to stop... Slaughter locking it in, Slaughter eventually overpowering, but they're right next to the ropes. Like, literally, Hogan could have got the ropes with his tongue. It was that close. But he insisted on trying to power out of it for a good 2 or 3 minutes before he eventually thought, you know what, I can stop this right now. I'll just get the ropes.
50 seconds, Mags.
Yeah.
I went back and timed it.
Was it actually 50 seconds? I mean,
is long enough. And it is literally, and even at that point, our good friend, you know, the ex-West Brom forward, Cyril Regis, is on commentary saying, why doesn't he get to the rope?
Yeah, exactly, you know? Exactly. And even when he grabbed the rope, he pointed to with his other hand, like to Earl, saying, look, I've got hold of the rope, call it off. And obviously then the hold is released. We get a couple of knees to the back, and then we went into the whole ridiculous stopping the pin spot, which was meant to lead to where we're starting to get to the finish. Slaughter grabbing a chair, giving Hogan a very slight tickle over the head, whilst Adnan had Earl distracted. Hogan rolls away, absolutely fine. We then get Slaughter go and grab the Iraqi flag, and all of a sudden Hogan's in the ring bleeding like a stuck pig. It's incredibly clear that the guy bladed, because he was perfectly fine after the chair shot, and then when he rolled into the middle of the ring, he was suddenly bleeding all over. The laying the flag over him, I thought that was a really good touch. That would have, if they would have got the pin off that, that would have been such heat. But that starts the typical Hogan finish, where he gets angry, starts powering up, rips the Iraqi flag. Now, if they'd have done that with the Stars and Stripes, Hogan would have been shot. But it was apparently it's fine to do it to an Iraqi flag. Hogan does his typical kind of powering, gets back to his feet, points a little bit, does the kind of wiggly finger, no, you're a bad boy, Slaughter, you're about to get it, blocks a few shots, punches, big boot, sold that, Slaughter sold that big boot beautifully. I thought he did really well with that.
Really good, yeah.
And then leg drop and win. So Hogan basically had 2 seconds of offense at the end and won the title. But what I did enjoy was Slaughter kicking out right at the end.
Yeah.
Which is a trick that Hogan used to pull off quite regularly. I think if I remember, he did it at WrestleMania 6 to Warrior, just in case there was any kind of like chance he could claim that he didn't lose the belt. Because he kicked out. But yeah, it was the match ended 20 minutes of tedium.
Yeah, I mean, there's a camel clutch spot in there. Again, I went back and timed this. This was close to 1 minute 10 seconds.
Do you know, I missed all that.
Terrible stuff. So, I mean, the one good little thing, I suppose, Silent Slaughter comes off the top rope at one stage, which, again, looked unusual, him being up there.
Yeah.
With a one-footed stomp into the smaller Hogan's back. And I thought that looked good.
It looked really painful. I thought that it could have potentially really hurt Hogan, because he brings all his weight down on that one foot on Hogan's chest and then like rolls out. But yeah, that was impressive for someone of Slaughter's heft.
Yeah, definitely. And then, like you said, it's he's beaten up, he's stomped on, he's bloody, he's a mess, he's basically dying on the canvas there. Mm-hmm. And then the Iraqi flag goes on his face, and it's Hogan jumps up. Considering he was dying 30 seconds ago, he's now won the title with a leg drop.
Correct. So,
oh dear. Yeah, and then the big orange racist just starts celebrating away, waving the flag around, and we get some absolute gold from the commentators here, don't we? That sum up how silly and how nonsensical this whole thing is, Mags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One line from Gorilla Monsoon, you can put it all to rest, the war is now officially over, because those pesky soldiers... Oh, those pesky soldiers, they went and finished their fighting before Hogan was ready. How inconsiderate of them, you know?
They were all waiting to go over the top and storm Baghdad, but they were just waiting for the signal from Hogan to say, come on home, lads, the war is won.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Bobby Heenan... he did it for the World Wrestling Federation, and he did it for the United States of America. Oh, mate, what a hero. And then...
And the shock of that, though, was that Bobby, all the way through the match, was clearly in the corner of Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
So he's a turncoat. I mean, how has nobody picked up on how he was essentially an Iraqi sympathizer? Because he was championing Sergeant Slaughter all the time, and his excuse for it was brilliant. Because I think it was Regis Philbin who picked him up on why he was supporting the enemy. Essentially, he said, "I blame Hogan because I've always wanted to manage a champion, and Hogan would never kind of let his spot go." And I thought, do you know what? I bet that is. There's an element of truth in that.
Yeah, I bet.
So yeah, that was an interesting little take by Bobby. But yeah, he was an Iraqi sympathizer for 20 minutes of this match.
Yeah, and like you said, at the end he comes out with that line. He's probably got Vince in his ear shouting at him, the man, he's saying, "Put Hogan over."
Yeah,
you know, or I'll make my sweaty son snog you or something. I don't know. You know?
And back then Shane would have been a kid, so it would have been like quite worryingly sweaty kid kissing.
Oh my god, I'm gonna have to edit so much. And then to finish it all off, we have Gorilla Monsoon absolutely amazed at the fact that despite the beating he has took and the energy he has spent out in this mammoth contest, he's still there, Hogan, celebrating. And he declares, "Look, Hulk still has something left, even after overcoming all the forces of evil."
In the world, there is the only evil is Sergeant Slaughter and General Adnan. Nothing else is evil bar them two. What I thought was fun was how many times Hogan paused. He normally would go around like every corner and kind of like have two sides of the arena like face off against each other to who would get the next set of pauses. But he did it about 10 times, and he kept going around and around. They did a shot. I think there was Donald Trump was there applauding, and Hogan did the pause for Donald Trump. Yeah, this was a love letter to America being the world's superpower.
Yeah. Yeah, just sadly, you know, a love letter that I don't, you know, begrudge any American citizen writing. Of course not. It's just very sad that on this occasion, that love letter was written by two crazy bastards in wax crayon. but there we go. I suppose now we come to the interesting part, Mr. Mikes. We always rate these matches out of 10 before we decide upon where we're going next.
Okay.
So do you want to go first or second, my friend?
Yeah, I'll go first. I dislike this match with a vengeance.
Do you? Really?
I mean, I've made it perfectly clear. And it's because of the old kind of Hogan must pause crap that... that we've had throughout the years. Probably at the time, I would have looked at it better because I would have been invested in the story. I wouldn't have known all the kind of like backstage stuff about Hogan. But actually, in this match, watching it and kind of like just switching my brain off, it wasn't as bad as a match as some of the trap we've watched. And there's certainly been worse matches out there in the wrestling world than this. So I can't in good conscience say it's the worst match on chain wrestling. It's certainly not the best.
No.
But I think I'm going to go with a 5.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Oh my God. That high?
You were clearly not going with a 5 then. I've destroyed our equal rating system then.
Mate, you've blown my mind with that. You really have. I know Dave Meltzer gave it 2.5, which is about, on our scale, it equates to around a 5. Well, it does equate to a 5, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that he was being incredibly generous. I'm amazed that you're being this generous. I thought it was the best part of this match for me was the crowd because they were so into it. But not like the best part of WrestleMania 18 Hogan Rock was the crowd because there was still stuff going on in the ring I enjoyed. This was the best part was the crowd and that was kind of it. It was slow. It was ploddy. I don't like when... I suppose when something takes me out of that bubble, when something breaks my suspension of disbelief. And I always got my dad in my head when I'm watching wrestling and something like that happens. I mean, if I was sat with my dad, who's not a big wrestling fan, he would poke fun at how silly something is. Yeah. And the chair shots that the referee ignores, Slaughter chokes Hogan with a cable that he ignores, the whole rope spot, Boston Crab thing is a big, big problem for me. That completely defeats the point of the whole submission style of any hold. If he's even putting it on that close and Hogan's not willing to grab the rope and try and power out, as they said at one stage on commentary, it completely ruins it for me. Sting Meng is the lowest rated match on chain wrestling so far with 2 out of 10. I can't give it much more than that, Max. I struggle to give it more than a 3.
Wow. I think you're doing Hogan a disservice considering what he did for the world.
You're saving the world.
Yeah. You yourself have had this pickup for 4 bloody months and you're giving it a 3.
Because I know how much you hate it.
You're giving it a 3.
Yeah.
Scandalous.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I only
you Iraqi sympathizer.
Ooh. I only hyped it up every week and so on, simply because I know how much you hated it and I thought it was funny. Watching it back, it's worse than I remember.
Well, watching it back, I didn't enjoy it by any stretch of the imagination, but I didn't hate it as much. Maybe that's because I've watched it fairly recently with James at that 90s wrestling podcast, but I didn't hate it as much as I remember hating it. So, yeah, I think I'm happy giving it a 5.
You gave it the same as the straitjacket steel cage match, mate.
That rubber stamps my point even more than...
Ah, okey doke. Right then, I suppose for the very first time in many, many weeks, kind of an end of an era, I suppose, Mags, mate. We got a link to our next step in the chain without me teasing Hogan Slaughter because it's been done and it's to never be brought up again.
It's never to be brought up again. Ever, ever.
So where would you like to go next week, my friend?
Okay, so I am going to go on a totally different tack. We've had familial links. We've now had links with dates and arenas. I'm actually going to go with a link of birthdays.
Oh, okay.
So Hulk Hogan, he was born on August the 11th. I think it was 1953. So I thought I'd go with somebody who was born on that day. No, or that date, rather. They weren't exactly born in 1953. This person was born in 1957. On August the 11th. Very well-known wrestling referee and manager. He did a little bit of wrestling, but nothing you would say of huge note. It was mainly used for wrestling storylines. But I'm going with Bill Alfonso. Now, for those not in the know, Bill Alfonso's real claim to fame was he was a huge part of ECW. He was the whistle-blowing referee slash manager there. And one of his major stable mates, I suppose, one of the people who he managed the most was Rob Van Dam. Very famously, he managed Rob Van Dam. So I'm going to go over a Rob Van Dam match. I've finally got to the tenuous link. In ECW, Rob Van Dam wrestled some absolutely outstanding matches. Really kind of broke the mold for wrestling there in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he had one particular dancing partner in the ring where everything they did seemed to just be absolute gold. And that was Jerry Lynn. So yeah. I'm going to go with a Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn match. They've actually got quite a few that they could choose from. One of my favourites is from the very last pay-per-view that ECW did, Guilty as Charged 2001. But I'm not going to go with that one. I'm actually going to go with one from a little bit earlier than that, from Hardcore Heaven 2000, which was on the 14th of May 2000, and it was Jerry Lynn versus Rob Van Dam with Bill Alfonso and Scotty Anton in Rob's corner.
Why? Okay. We had an RVD Jerry Lynn match on a few weeks back, and I was gutted it didn't win. It wasn't this one. So I'm really happy this has come back up, because I'll be honest with you, when I put, or well, I can't remember if it was me or you now, but when the RVD Jerry Lynn match came up last time, I saw it on the poll a couple of days after. I'm thinking, oh man, I really do hope that wins now, but it didn't. So I'm over the moon that it's coming back up. Not the same contest, it's a different one. But yeah, I'm really glad to be having a look at that potentially. That's fantastic, Max. That's a great show.
Yeah, and it's always been, I was very late to the ECW kind of bandwagon, but seeing Jerry Lynn and Rob Van Dam, honestly, they were like magic together.
Yeah. Yeah, the first ECW pay-per-view I ever actually saw properly in its entirety was the last one. I got it on a VHS tape from that second-hand dodgy-smelling place down in town. And that's what got me into it. But by that stage, of course, it was a bit late. So. but no, that's a brilliant show. And Bill Alfonso now, he's managing a guy called Venetius in Coastal Championship Wrestling in Florida. So he's still involved quite heavily there and so on. Yeah, so yeah, that's a great shape, mate. That's a great shape. I'm going a little bit more straightforward with my pick, I suppose. WrestleMania 7, we've just had a look at, with Hogan Slaughter as the main event. It's primarily viewed, I suppose, as a two-match card, really. Earlier on in the event, you obviously had the title match as the main event, but earlier on in the event, you had Warrior versus Savage in a retirement match, which potentially Warrior's best match of his career. Savage did a great job there with the Warrior, I think. Mm-hmm. A real testament to how talented Randy Savage is.
Yeah.
I'd like to look at a Randy Savage match using that as part of the link, and WrestleMania as also part of the link, and literally just jump forward 12 months. And I'd like to go back and have a look at the sometimes forgotten about or sometimes overlooked slightly Macho Man Randy Savage versus Ric Flair WWF title match from WrestleMania 8. Kind of gets a little lost in that big card with a Hogan main event again, even though he's not the champion. Mm-hmm. But it's a match that got, same as the RVD Jerry Lynn match, it got rated very highly in all the wrestling dirt sheets and newsletters at the time. So I'd like to go back and have a little look at that one, mate.
Yep, it's an outstanding pick. It's one that we'll be covering in a couple of months on that 90s wrestling podcast. We're just starting to get into 1992 in the next couple of weeks. So we'll get to WrestleMania pretty soon. But I love the whole storyline of that, the kind of using Macho's jealousy with Liz to fuel that feud. I remember there being doctored photos of Rick and Liz together when with the monogram towels and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a great pick.
Okay, so there we go. Those are your options for next week. We have no tease for Hogan Slaughter. I feel quite sad, mate. I feel quite sad about that. I don't get to play Real American. It makes me a bit sad.
Play it one last time.
One last time.
Way out.
Ah, maybe I will.
But just in that, slow it down so it's really dragged and you can hear the pain and anguish in it for you.
yeah, potentially. okay, so your options for next week are Jerry Lynn versus Rob Van Dam, the excellent contest they have at Hardcore Heaven 2000, the ECW event, or the WWF title match between Randy Savage and Ric Flair from WrestleMania 8. Yeah, so that's the end of the show. That's us looking at Hogan saving the world at long last for the final time. Mr. Mags, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you on the social medias, please?
Okay, so you can find me at Real Hulk Hogan, where I will be being pretty racist. I'll also be hosting WrestleMania in about 3 or 4 weeks. So look out for that. No, you can follow me on Twitter at DAJ Kirby, where there is many links to my content.
Indeed. You can follow me at SJP Words. And again, the show is at @chain_wrestling. When this show comes out, within half an hour to a day, the poll normally follows in the attached tweet next on the thread. Make sure you get your votes in and your thoughts on any of these matches. Mm-hmm. I'm off to the shop and to see if I can catch a quick gang fight on the way. I'll speak to you next week, Max.
Bye-bye.